97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
So angry about something right now, but I feel like it's not appropriate the day to throw a fit of anger. No, it has to do. I'm just going to tell you what it is because it's playing out in real time on my Twitter feed. I won't make a big deal out of this because I want to talk to Fred about 9/11 memories because he has some amazing memories. But Mizzou plays KU in a football game tonight at 7 o'clock, and my alma mater, the University of Missouri, ranked number 23 in the country, favored in this game, has put out a pretty cool hype video for the game tonight. The University of Kansas did the same thing, and what they did was, and it's shameful and just embarrassing, is they put a video out that highlights the fact that, and by the way, we were not a Confederate state. We were a mixed state in the Civil War, but highlights the fact or tries to claim that slavery is still a part of this rivalry between KU and Mizzou. Utterly ridiculous. Oh my God. If you could see the video. And then where I'm angry is the responses to people somehow trying to defend it. The football game at 7 p.m. tonight in Lawrence, Kansas has nothing to do with slavery whatsoever. And for the University of Kansas, on their official account, to promote a video that does that is disgusting. So I've admitted I'm nervous about this game. I hope we win by 4 freaking touchdowns and smoke these jackasses tonight. And I cannot wait to respond to all the idiots on my Twitter feed who are somehow thinking bringing up slavery in connection with this game is appropriate. It's unreal that a football game between two rivals has to be about race. I'm hoping that this is a small minority of the people, but it was Kansas. It was the University of Kansas that put this out. You know what a Jayhawker is, by the way?
No.
Do you, Fred? Okay.
No.
Well, the Jayhawker, they were militias, and they were anti-slavery militias during the Civil War, of which Missouri had members. It wasn't just Kansas. Missouri was a very divided state. But again, for me to even waste any time on this is utterly ridiculous that people... And shame on the University of Kansas, really. I got a lot of parents here that have their kids go to KU. I feel sorry for you at this point because that is shameful. There are a few things that I've seen that have been more shameful than what they did at the University of Kansas today to promote
that
this football game.
That is so weird.
It's disgusting is what it is. And for you KU fans out there, I can say there's no better time than to say what we say every football game at the University of Missouri, which we shouldn't do because it's kind of embarrassing in itself. But FKU fits better than any other time. Okay, that's all. Off my soapbox. Fred, you were at Camo X on 9/11 in 2001. And, you know, I think we had this meeting a couple of days ago with our boss, Steve Morris, who... And Steve's memories, and he was relatively new here at the time at KMOX, were that our producer teams, and we had some great producers, Peggy Cohill, Chris Myhill, I worked with him for a while, and Fred, you were amongst them. But you guys, the way Steve told it is that before he can even open his mouth, Fred and Chris and the producers had chalkboards going, and they had all kinds of contacts
great.
Up there.
Yeah.
And you just kicked into action, right, Fred?
Well, let's just start with me sharing my story of what the day was like. So, you know, like you, I heard you talk about this earlier. I spent the morning with my two kids, mm-hmm. my young sons. Noah was 2 at the time. Shane was 4 at
the
time.
Yeah, our kids very close in age.
Right.
Yeah.
So getting them ready, getting Shane ready for preschool when the first plane hit, I was watching the Today Show. So I could actually, I saw, you know, when the second one went in. And Marie was right there and she said, hey, get Shane away from the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I was just
right.
watching. I didn't even think about that. So went ahead and got him ready, took him to his preschool, Notre Dame preschool in Jefferson Barracks National Park, and took Noah along with me. And when we walked into the preschool, all the nuns were in a prayer circle with the parents and the kids praying. Mm. So that's a memory that you're not going
absolutely.
To forget. So I dropped Shane off there. Took Noah to daycare, dropped him off, drove down to work, parked about like I usually did then because we were down by the river, the building, parked, you know, 4 or 5 blocks away, the longest walk ever to get to the station, and noticing the quiet skies above me, just so eerie. I got into work and went into the studio and just started, you know, getting with Peggy and Chris, the other two producers, and we got the 2000 version of a whiteboard. It was a paper, that we would paper flipboard, and we just wrote down, just unloaded all of our contacts and people that could be guests, and just started writing down phone numbers and names and started calling people. And our coverage was so intense that we used the network coverage as a backup when we couldn't get guests that we could get ourselves.
But the way Steve told it the other day is that KMOX was doing such a good job with the coverage, you barely had to rely on the network, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Wow. Sorry, keep going.
No, so, I mean, that was how it went for, you know, 10 hours. I mean, we just did
more than that,
ongoing coverage. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, because when I went in, you know, similar situation, I'm watching Blue's Clues with my kids. My sister calls. I flip it on. I'm probably not smart enough to turn my kids away from the TV, but I rush them up to daycare, and I go into the station, WTMJ, my station at the time. They kick me out. They're like, go home. We need you tonight. I mean, I was dying to get on the air and to cover this, but my show is in the evening, so I went home. I absorbed all the, you know, the content from that day, and we were just numb. And one of the things that just, you know, to this day makes me so sad, I had a cat that was 18 years old, my cat Max. I found him, I always like to say he found me, at 10th and Locust, downtown Columbia, Missouri, when I lived there. And I was set to go take him to the vet on that morning, that Tuesday morning of September 11th. And when all that happened, I, you know, the week changed, and I finally took him, you know, on that Friday, and that was one of the more sad weeks that I've ever had in my life because of not only that, but because of 9/11 and just the pain from that week.
The unusual thing for me when it comes to my story is that today, those two boys of mine, Shane and Noah, are both at these different scenes in New York
and the Pentagon.
Yeah, right.
Noah is at the Pentagon. He was there in the courtyard this morning
for the ceremony
to hear President Trump speak.
Great.
And to see the ceremony. Shane works at World Trade Center building number 4. So he was there and he saw everything that was going on outside of the World Trade Centers at
Ground
Zero.
That's incredible. It really is. Yeah.
So it's just freaky to think that they were, you know, 25 years ago, 2 and 4. And being shuttled to daycare and
to think of where they are now,
nurse preschool.
That is very interesting.
And now they're actually at the scene of both of the horrible catastrophes.
That's nuts. It really is.
It's interesting that KMOX got all the info and doubled down. I was at Channel 4 at the time. We were doing the morning show. Mark Cox was there. And we were in the cut-ins phase where they would go to CBS. And I'm in the Weather Center, and they have a giant TV screen there. And Corey Barron was the meteorologist at the time. And we watched the first one hit. You know, they were showing the footage. And he and I were going, well, what, did the pilot get lost?
Right.
You know, nobody knew what the heck. And then the second one hit, and everything changed. We never went back to local. It all became national, and Harry Smith took over, and that was it.
Yeah, when that second plane went in, because I was watching some of the reels this morning. They're all over Instagram and Twitter, just if you want memories. And for those people who weren't alive during those days, you can hear there's a couple of montages out there of CBS's show and the Today Show and the local shows in New York. Everyone's saying kind of the same thing. They're very confused. There's an explosion. We heard there's a plane that went into the building. They're literally doing their coverage, and then they see that other plane come in. Some of them don't see it.
Yes.
They just think it's another explosion.
And we had Brian Kilmeade doing that live.
Right.
Because he was on air when the second one came in.
Yeah.
And he had to explain and try and figure out what was going on.
Yeah. The whole week was crazy. The whole time period. I can't believe that it was 25 years ago. And then just some of the stories. Jeff Smith was mentioning something in the last hour. He sent it to me. I'll try to put it on Twitter, because some of the accounts that have happened, and I've really been heartbroken this week because I've heard and written, not written, but read pieces from some of the kids that were either, you know, 1-year-old, 2-year-old, or some of them, they weren't born. Their mothers were pregnant when their fathers died during 9/11. And, you know, I mentioned this earlier because this is just so eerie, but there's a documentary that I'm watching right now that is just on YouTube, but it was made by a guy who was just simply trying to make a documentary about a firehouse in New York City. and his cameras are tracking this firehouse, and they said that they had been to the Twin Towers. They were probably there five times a week for different things that would happen. And so it was a little bit more maybe perfunctory at first because they didn't know what they were, you know, getting into. And as they walk and everybody, some of these guys, they have 60 pounds of equipment and they realize that they have to walk up the stairs, you know, 80 flights of stairs, whatever it is, because the elevator shafts are filled with jet fuel and all that stuff. So as they're walking around, confused, not sure what's happening, they hear thumping from above and they kind of look up and then somebody says, "Those are jumpers." And those are the people that were, you know, desperately trying to get out of that fire and that cauldron that was created by the airplanes. The other thing that's really sad about it is to this day, and I saw this idiot on Twitter yesterday, and I don't even know how I came across him, they still, you know, come up with conspiracies about this. I mentioned, you know, people are questioning how everyone made cell phone calls. What do you think, that there was a Hollywood studio that patched together and edited together a bunch of, you know, family members from Flight 93 and all these other flights, and they were faking people out so as to make this an inside job. So all these 3,000 people at the Trade Center, everyone at the Pentagon, everyone who died on Flight 93, right? They're all in on it, right? They all somehow were in on this big conspiracy to bring the Twin Towers down that the government was, you know, conducting as an inside job. It's frightening to me how many people believe that, or they still question some of this because it's kooky, it's off the wall, but that's where we are.
One more thing I want to add about KMOX and what we did that day. Right away, I started working on an interfaith memorials prayer service, putting it together. So that weekend at Forest Park, we had St. Louis Archbishop Justin Regali, Rabbi Jeffrey Stiffman, Imam Muhammad Abdullah Noor from the Islamic Center all showed up, and hundreds, probably thousands of St. Louisans all showed up to pay their respects and just show kindness to everyone there at Forest Park. So that was, you know, touching for me to work on and to remember as well.
Thanks, Fred, for the memories. I mean, I think that in this building, there's not a whole lot of people that have the perspective anymore that you have. We're going to take a break. Sue's News is coming up. Hey, it's time for Sue's News here on a Friday.
Allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Well, it is Hot Cross Bun Day, which sounds good to me. Listen, my grandma Thomas used to make a hot cross bun. Oh, they're so good. And I tried it, you know. We found, like, the old recipe. Mine weren't quite, I don't know, hers were pillowy, Fred. Mine were not pillowy. I'm going to try it again until I get it.
Pillowy is good.
Yes. Mine were not. Mine were not hard rocks, but they were not pillowy. And it's also National Make.
Wait, I had a question about because, like, all I remember about that is, like, the song. Wasn't there a song about hot cross buns?
Yes. Wait, I don't think I just sang it right, but yes.
Right. That's kind of all it was a nursery rhyme, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because
so
I'm looking
those?
This up. I don't really remember. I don't know if I've ever had, like, an official hot cross bun. Maybe I have, but I do remember the nursery rhyme.
And they had, usually we made them at Easter. Right, because there's a cross in the top, and you could put raisins in or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I probably had them when I was a kid, right?
I would think so. It's also National Make Your Bed Day. I feel like we have this every few months.
Okay, so I've got a question. Do you guys make your bed every day?
Yes.
Mark? Oh, really? Oh, that's the first shocking question.
Shocking.
Why would I make my bed? There's no one coming in my room except my wife and my dogs. Why would I make my bed?
Fred,
what's the point of making my bed? Then I have to unmake it to get in.
Then it's gonna be all more icky to get into. It's
icky.
Not gonna be clean.
Clean?
Wait, I'm sorry. It's not gonna be like nice sheets. It'll be wrinkled and blah blah. Everything will be messed up.
The same place it'll be 2 hours after I've lay down and fall asleep again.
So what's
the point? It's a wasted point of, I'm wasting my time by making the bed.
No, in fact, it's a good way to start off your day.
Yes.
To have nice and fresh and clean and done.
No, a better day way is to get your Diet Coke, pop it open, and eat four Hostess donuts. That's how I start my day. Why would I want to start my day with making a bed?
To start off properly things in order.
No.
Fred!
Oh, yeah, I'm with you, Sue.
Okay, thank you. No. It's also national, and this is not a surprise, but it's Patriot and National Day of Service and Remembrance. because of 9/11, and I will talk about that some more. But first, we're going to do this. 59 years ago today, in 1967, it was the premiere of the Carol Burnett Show. And that was such a big deal in childhood. Like, we were allowed to stay up. It ran for 11 seasons. It won 25 Primetime Emmy Awards. And it came out in 1967. Obviously, I wasn't watching it yet. Fred, how did you guys handle it?
Oh, every Saturday night at 9 o'clock we watched.
Oh, my gosh. Mark?
Look, some of my fondest memories of my grandma and grandpa, who helped raise me when I was younger, was watching the Carol Burnett Show with them.
Yes.
And I don't know how, at the age of 6, 7, 8, because this is when I would have been watching it with them, I thought that show was funny.
Yes.
But I did.
Me too.
And you know, you had Harvey Korman and Tim Conway was
Tim Conway
unreal.
So funny.
When he would crack up during a skit.
Yes.
Right. It was amazing.
Yes.
There was just something about that show.
Yes.
You know, and they've tried variety shows in the aftermath. I know there's been some that have been popular, but yeah, she was a national treasure, and the show was as well, I think.
She still is. She's still alive.
Carol is?
Yeah. 52 years ago, it was 1974, when another show that I watched as a kid, Little House on the Prairie, debuted on TV. And that, of course, was Michael Landon and Melissa Gilbert. And I'm not sure I watched it from the very beginning, but pretty close. I just did 52 years ago. Say what?
Okay. Two kinds of people in this world, Sue.
People who watched Little House on the Prairie, the people who watched The Waltons.
And I was a Little House on the Prairie person.
Me too. Were you a Waltons person, Fred?
I was a John Boy Walton fan.
Oh, my gosh. I never even knew it was on. Did you, Mark? I didn't know anything
about
The Waltons.
Yeah, no, I knew it was
Waltons.
On. You were highly more protected by your parents. My parents were like, yeah, watch whatever you want, I think essentially is what happened.
Kid, you're energetic. Sit down for a minute. How about an hour? Perfect.
My favorite story is the babysitter that had me watching Saturday Night Live, and then the bit from, like, it was one of the first seasons of SNL.
Oh, my
gosh. Josh Ramsey, VD caseworker. And she sent me up to the room after that bit came on.
Hilarious.
Hey, I did both shows, though. Little House on the Prairie and The Waltons.
Okay.
I watched
you straddled. Yeah.
Well,
you had,
Fred,
bipartisan support there.
That's exactly right. That's very big of you. Plus, your sisters. Yeah, you had older siblings who would introduce you to this stuff. I was flying blind. Mark was flying blind. We're just doing stuff what we can. Now, also, of course, this is 25 years ago of 9/11, and I wanted to mention some specifics. It was 2001, and at 8:46 a.m. and at 9:03 a.m., two hijacked planes were crashed into the World Trade Center. The other two suicide flights crashed at the Pentagon and in the woods of Pennsylvania. A total of 2,792 people died in the World Trade Center attacks. 184 innocent people died in the Pentagon attack. Now, that includes those on the plane. And 40 in a plane that crashed in Pennsylvania. And I found this today. It was put out, but it's kind of a montage because radio was a major source for people who were commuting to work or driving their cars when the first plane hit. And as the morning continued, so did the reports of more tragedy, and we've got a little montage of it.
This just into our newsroom, a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center.
Another plane just hit the World Trade Center.
Two planes have smashed into the towers minutes apart.
This plane flew directly into the second World Trade Center.
We now have reports of a fire at the Pentagon.
I just watched a plane crash near the Pentagon.
Oh my God! The entire World Trade Center, the South Building, just crumbled from the top.
The building just disappeared in the smoke.
A large plane crashes in western Pennsylvania. If this is indeed connected to what has happened here this morning, it is quite clear that the United States is under attack.
Oh, my God. The second building appears to have gone down.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The second building that has gone down.
A situation that started bad just gets worse and worse and worse. Clearly, we're in the middle of the worst ever act of terrorism directed at the United States on domestic soil, and it may not be over.
Well, it just reminded me, and I'm sorry, that's obviously not uplifting, but it reminded me how this is why they wouldn't let any planes fly. We did not know to what extent the U.S. was under attack.
Well, think about if you worked in Chicago at the John Hancock Center or the Sears Tower or something like that.
You had to be panicked.
Get out of there, right? You had no idea what was happening next.
And none of us could figure it out. We were just flying, trying to figure out what was going on. All right, and finally, in Sue's news, we have today's random fact. Construction on the Pentagon began on September 11th, 1941, exactly 60 years before 9/11.
Wow.
And that was when roughly one-third of the building was damaged.
That's an interesting trivia nugget. Yeah, there you go, wrapping Sue's news on a very somber day. Well, certainly after a day like this and after a week of remembering the horrible tragedy from 25 years ago, maybe we can use some entertainment recommendations as we head into the weekend. Paul Hall from Common Guy Films is here. I've reminded folks a couple of times, Paul, you might remember this. It was the St. Louis Cardinals trying to take on the Milwaukee Brewers the night of 9/11. That game got canceled. Cardinals were up there that day. How are you?
I'm well. In fact, I still remember the biggest thing about 9/11 in this neck of the woods. President George H.W. Bush was right here in the area.
Yeah, he was grounded.
Past the golf course he was on almost every day. So it's there's some weird coincidences. And I remember looking for a pilot friend of mine who was up that day and ended up getting grounded over Cleveland. On his way out east. He was headed out east from Milwaukee at the time. So,
you know, and I don't know that there have been a lot of releases in the last couple of weeks. You can probably tell me this, but over the last 5 years, there have been really some excellent 9/11 documentaries that have been put out on Netflix, on Max, and some of the other platforms as well.
Yeah, there's a couple really good ones out there. The interesting things to me, Mark, are the ones that take people that weren't here. When that happened 25 years ago, the daughter of the pilot of, I believe it was United 93 is on one of them. There are people that were the sons, the daughters, the spouses, the some people that just don't know. And the kind of amazing idea that there are a group of, there's a generation in this country that didn't live in anything other than post 9/11, and they don't think it is a big deal, which really finds it
it's weird, right? For us who have a different perspective, of course, that's very strange. All right, what do you got for us this week?
Well, of course. So then we're going to go ahead and talk about a new movie called The Uprising, which is in theaters this week from director Paul Greengrass.
Well, I like Paul Greengrass. He did the, if I'm not mistaken, he did the United 93 film, right? Not the documentary, but the film several years ago. It was very realistic. I thought it was an excellent movie. So tell me about this one.
This is based on Robin Hood, the legend that inspired Robin Hood. So they call it based on a true story when they market it. Andrew Garfield in the lead role as a plowman. He's the guy who basically turns into who we later know as kind of Robin Hood here. He starts a revolution, and he does that by fighting back against a king who's taking everything from them, including, well, one of the more disgusting scenes that I've seen since The Accused, Mark. The rape scene in The Accused with Jodie Foster. Mm-hmm. There's a scene early in The Uprising that will churn your stomach, and if it doesn't, then you don't have a heart. It's not as graphic, but it's obvious what's going on, and that starts the match that starts the fire burning here. It teaches you a lot of things in Paul Greengrass's film. He deals with topics like sometimes even in a movement to uprise and change things, there are people with different agendas. Go figure. Within the same group fighting for something, whose agenda is going to win out? Well, you have to see the movie to see it. Very, very violent, very, very ultra realistic in the way it deals with an uprising and everything from like the scene I mentioned, as well as the beheadings that happened eventually along the way. But I found myself glued to the screen for 2 hours and 7 minutes or so.
And that's
really
a theatrical.
Like Greengrass's.
That's a theatrical this week? Okay.
Yeah, check that out on big screen.
All right. What about streaming? I'm really looking forward to the Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson Apple TV Plus show called Brothers. I think that might start next week, right?
I cannot tell you about it yet officially, but 2 weeks out. I believe it's the 23rd we're going to see that hit Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, what I heard there is you've seen some of it, which is good, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's talk about one that is hitting Apple TV Plus. So Last Scene And this is one that 6 episodes long. You get the first 2 up now, coming out of Australia, about a tale of a police dispatcher whose daughter disappears. And he thinks that she's gone and has been gone for over 11 years. He's working at his job as a police dispatcher. His life had changed, of course, when the daughter goes missing and they presume she's dead. When he gets some weird calls and things start changing along the way. This is a thriller that the first 2 episodes take it one way, and as the episodes go on, it takes it a couple other ways. I like this a lot. I'm up to the season finale, which will air in a couple weeks. 2 new episodes up on Apple TV Plus. Names that you wouldn't know. Maybe Patrick Bramall you might, but other than that, these are characters out of Australia, and it's really, really good.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the cast. I don't recognize one name in this, but I love the the Apple TV Plus shows. I'm watching, I think I told you, we just started or about to start season 3 of Tehran. I never really watched that one. That's a pretty good show on Apple TV Plus. One movie recommendation that I had, I don't want to forget to toss this in because I talked about it earlier in the week. It was a hot summer weekend here in St. Louis last week. We had not been to the theaters in a little while. I'd seen Spider-Man in the theaters and The Odyssey as well. We went, Paul, the family, Alexa, Becky, and I went and saw Coyote versus Acme. I thought it was fantastic. It was really, really fun. And Will Forte made that such an excellent watch. I mean, the animation, and for those of us who have the appreciation with the Warner Brothers characters, obviously it's going to hit a little harder, but I really liked it. It was a fun movie.
It was great for those of us who grew up with Bugs Bunny and Wile E and Roadrunner and Daffy and you name it. This is a fun movie. I love the heck out of this movie, but I'm a Bugs Bunny fan, and I have been for all the last 50 years of my life, shall we say, give or take a 4, 5, 6 more. But it's such a good time at the movie. It's such a reminder of what the movies were. And speaking of that, we have a new streaming title out called Untold from the Untold series. This is the guys who did the Breaking Bad, all that type of stuff. They did one on Mr. T now. Mr. T, I pity the fool in the Untold thing. 45 minutes, you've got to see this. From anyone who grew up in the 80s, I mean, people today don't realize how big Mr. T was.
He was huge.
In this
business. Yeah.
One of the biggest revelations I saw in here was, and I didn't know this, he didn't even have to audition for the A-Team. He was the only one who didn't have to audition for the A-Team. They built the series around him because he was a larger-than-life character coming out of Rocky III. And you know what? The other thing this one does is, for once, we get one of these type of docs that show you a guy still just a genuinely good guy. I mean, the guy's got a rooting in faith that is unimaginable. He comes from nowhere in Chicago in the projects and became someone who was iconic. I mean, he's on serials. He was on ads for everything in the 80s. Untold Mr. T, I Pity the Fool, 45 minutes. You will enjoy it if you're a child of the 80s and 90s like myself.
Yep. Love it.
Make sure you click on the one that says Untold, because as I'm on IMDb and I look it up, I find from 2006, I Pity the Fool, a TV series with Mr. T.
Really?
So, yeah, I don't remember that one
series?
At all. Well, you know what's funny is it only seems like it has maybe a couple episodes, Sue. I don't know if it made it that far. anything else you want to recommend, streaming otherwise, as we head into this weekend, Paul?
Couple of the other big new movies are out. Supergirl is over on HBO Max for those of you who want to check that out. I've been waiting on it. And we've got good things coming down the path. Let me tell you, I've seen a couple of them. And like I may have intimated a little earlier, I can't talk about all of them, but there are good things. We're in the fall movie season coming out of Toronto, and life is going to get good at the movies for those of you who look for good movies. For those of you who are looking for that sneak preview type movie, we talk about them. I've talked about them a number of times, the mystery movies. Marcus has a family one on Sunday afternoon, and they have another one Monday night. This is your chance to see something before it comes out at a cheap price. Usually it's $6, and hit up your local Marcus Theater. I should be getting paid by them for all the great publicity I do. But
yeah.
Anywhere who does these Marcus Invoice Theater
them.
Things.
Invoice them for sure. All right. Next Friday will be the 18th. So hopefully you will have seen some of this. I'm a little frustrated because I watched the show from the first season on MGM Plus. I rather liked it. But it was literally the only thing that I was watching on MGM Plus, so I canceled it. Well, now along comes a new series which looks very intriguing that stars St. Louis and John Hamm as a radio announcer named Fred Heckman in Indianapolis. And this is based on a true story. It is the story of a hostage crisis and a guy by the name of Tony Curtitis who demands to be interviewed by Fred on his program at WIBC. WIBC was actually a station I almost went to work at, Paul. I had two choices, WIBC or WTMJ. I chose Milwaukee because of baseball, believe it or not. They didn't have a baseball team in Indianapolis, and I was a baseball fan. Plus, it was closer to my mom and dad. But that I'm really looking forward to. But I'm going to have to resubscribe to MGM Plus, right?
Probably. I could get you. I can find a link that'll get you a discounted rate there for anybody.
Please do.
I'll put something up this week to give people a chance to see it. I think that's the same DJ and the same story based on the film that came out last year at the end of the year where he wanted to be on the radio in Indianapolis. And it was a feature film, and I'm drawing a blank on the name.
Yeah, I don't know what that one
moment,
is.
But that was Coleman Domingo played Fred Heckman in that one. So obviously a very different casting choice for the film.
Yeah, it starts on the 20th. It'll be interesting. All right, tell folks where that's actually a series. It's going to be a series. Tell folks where they can find your reviews.
Simple, commonguy.com.
We'll talk next week. All right, a lot to talk about here. Big night at the ballpark. Frank Cusimano. Let's start with Mizzou and KU, Lawrence, Kansas. I don't know if you saw this ridiculous video that KU football put out making references to slavery. It's embarrassing as hell, and it doesn't belong in any conversation about a football game. And I already wanted to kick their ass by four touchdowns, and I hope they do. But candidly, I'm nervous about this game, Frank. I don't know where Frank is.
Gotcha.
There we
gotcha.
Go. Okay, yeah. There we go. Sorry about that.
I can understand how you feel, but I got to tell you something. I actually went back and watched a little of that Kansas-Long Island game, and there's just a difference in the size of players for Mizzou and the size of players for Kansas. Now, could they be coached up and be fired up with the new facility and everything? Maybe, but look, you're recruiting SEC athletes. You're recruiting a better athlete. You're paying them more. They have more stars by their names, and I think they're going to be coached up just fine. So I'm not that concerned, and I just can't wait to see what Jamal Roberts is going to do running behind Caden Green, one of the best offensive tackles in college football.
Yeah, so he's back in the lineup tonight. Look, the line, a lot of money is going in on KU. I think I've even heard 4.5 points this afternoon. Maybe that's why I'm just a little nervous. But it's a rivalry game. It's early in the season. We saw a great first half with Austin Simmons. He didn't play in the second half, so you have question marks there. But they got to get that run game going tonight, don't they?
Yeah, and keep in mind, the last time Jamal Roberts played against the Kansas Jayhawks, 143 yards, including a 63-yarder to clinch it. I think he is really fired up. I mean, this may be one of his last games to be the featured back, and I think he'll play great tonight.
Well, let's talk about, you know, I'm actually going to sacrifice at least half of that game tonight to be at the ballpark tonight for the World Series commemoration from 2006. The ceremonies get underway not too long from now. It's going to be a fun weekend at Busch Stadium, and it's the last homestand of the year already, the start of the last homestand, Frank.
Yeah, and the attendance is going to be insane. I just talked to Joe Strom. Over 30,000 tonight, 41,000 Saturday, 35,000 Sunday. I spent the morning at the Lowe's Hotel talking with about 15 members of the 2006 World Championship team. You know, everybody's there. In fact, Mark, quick little story. Wainwright told it that I asked him about the most famous pitch maybe in Cardinal history, the curveball, the strikeout Carlos Beltran in Game 7. And he said right before that game, Yadier Molina and Dave Duncan and he were discussing that a lot of times Wainwright had gotten Beltran in 0-2 situations and then just started to throw balls and tried to make him chase. They said before the game, if we're 0-2, we are throwing him a strike. And Wainwright said, we got to 0-2. And I'm thinking to myself, God, I can't throw him a strike. And then he said, well, I got to go back to my pregame and listen to Dave and Yachty. He threw him a strike, and the Cardinals win the pennant.
That is amazing. That's going to be. And then tomorrow, obviously, is going to be awesome with the Hall of Fame day. And then we can't forget about the squishies, because my daughter's all about the squishies on Sunday, Frank. So lots of promotions, lots of fun for the fans. Hopefully, we'll see a little Jordan Walker in some offense and some of these new guys. I mean, half the guys up on that lineup tonight, people might not even know who they are.
You're right. And I think a guy like Jordan Walker, with all these great Cardinals of the past in town watching him, you know, he's involved in a little slump right now. I wouldn't be surprised if a couple of these youngsters really show out tonight and show the 2006 world champions that we're pretty good too.
Frank, I want to throw it back in, you know, in honor of the 25th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. You know, it was only a handful of days after that Jack Buck had his very famous poem and speech at the ballpark. Were you at the ballpark for that? If so, what do you remember? What do you remember just about St. Louis sports and the fans during that time immediately following the attacks?
Well, we just shut down our sports department at Channel 5. In fact, it was one of the reasons why Mike Bush decided to move from sports to news, because he wanted to be involved in bigger stories. All I can remember is Bill Reeve was having that big BMW championship at the time, and we're on the range. And we got the news, and I distinctly remember in that circle drive at Belrive, Tiger Woods getting into a black Buick Enclave, and he drove straight to Orlando after that. And it was, you know, it was supposed to be a huge event here in St. Louis, and all the golfers just leaving right in front of our faces, and then the world changed.
What's coming up on the show on Sunday night, Frank?
We sit down with one of the most fascinating figures in Cardinal history, Scott Spezio. He came in studio, and nobody has been through more, the drug addiction, the alcohol addiction, the problems with the police, and now look who's standing, and look who's motivating people, and look who's got a great life. So it's his inspiring story.
Have fun at the ballpark this weekend. Enjoy the show on Sunday. We'll talk Monday afternoon, hopefully, about a bunch of victories and about a fun thing. By the way, one thing I should close on, because the prohibitive, perhaps Super Bowl favorites, the LA Rams, looked like they might not even make the playoffs last night. That was horrible for the Rams. I mean, the 49ers defense looked incredible.
It was the best 3 hours of my week. I enjoyed the heck out of it.
All right. Yeah, I think a lot of people in St. Louis did. Frank, take care. I appreciate it.
See you, buddy.
All right. You know what? By the way, here's what I didn't enjoy. Sue loves it when we talk about fantasy football. Devontae Adams didn't do jack last night. It was almost like Matt Stafford didn't want to throw to him. Did you watch that game?
I did.
Why in the world were the personnel that he was? I was so confused.
So here's my very quick breakdown of this. You know all of the hoopla that went into how the Rams got to Australia, correct?
Meaning they took a different path than the 49ers. They were
Niners
there for
got there last
a week ahead
the
of time.
The Rams got
24
there
24 hours.
Yesterday,
right.
Basically.
No, I knew that.
And
bad
they
idea.
Had been sending coaches, personnel for 2 years, monitoring their body rhythms, their sleep, to try and figure out if this was the best way. They were sold that this was the best way for, I guess, getting on the clock rhythm and everything, for them to get there pretty much right before. That did not work for them.
No, it did not work at all. They looked awful.
They looked horrible.
I mean, Aaron Donald didn't make the trip, but it was ugly football for the Rams.
Get more at 971talk.com.